We're back. Hour three, about 5 minutes in. And tomorrow, I should mention, you've got OBS, the Winter Mixed. They started about an hour ago. They have an under tack show that they actually, they pushed it back an hour. And I'll tell you, across the country, I mean, the cold weather everywhere. Speaking of cold weather, too, Parks is canceled for today, which means, I think, assuming that it's not unplayable in Youngstown in Ohio, I think only Mahoning Valley and Turf Paradise. I think those are the only venues today, if I'm not mistaken. Hold on. Let me just glance at this. Monday? Louisiana Downs, too, I think. Yeah, Louisiana Downs. Yeah, okay, so Louisiana Downs and for quarters, anyway. And Turf Paradise and Mahoning Valley. That's it. Slim pickings today. Slim pickings today. All right. Little too much back end. Little too much, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Need a little bit more Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Ben Colebrook standing by. I'm yapping away. Ben, good morning.
Morning. How are you, Steve?
Good. How you been?
Good. Can't complain. No. Like you said, it's cold everywhere. We're just trying to stay warm here in Kentucky. No, it's not too bad. Kind of gray and dreary, but.
Well, yeah, that and you know, you got hit again last week. You've had more snow in Kentucky than we got in upstate New York.
I'm telling you. Yeah, and they're out west, they're not getting much either. So the ski resorts are all complaining, but not out west. So.
Well, is there a ski hill or two in Kentucky out of curiosity? I never thought of that.
There's one not in Kentucky, but there's one by Turfway. There's a little place in Indiana, actually, called Perfect North Slopes. It's like 20 minutes from Turfway Park.
That's pretty funny. I've never heard. I lived in Cincinnati 2 years, and I don't ever remember anybody saying, you want to go skiing?
Yeah. Yeah, no, now you can.
Well, of course, you know, Cincinnati's the city of seven hills, and
right, yeah, exactly.
But there's really no, you know, there's no place. I wouldn't try slaloming down, you know, from Mount Adams. You'll find yourself on Taft. Yeah. You'll get right out into Taft Avenue and get flattened. They got to be going. You know what? They got to be going crazy for the Bengals. I mean, it's pretty exciting.
Oh yeah, Uday Nation's in full effect. I think. Yeah. And then the game last night was unreal between the Chiefs and the Bills. Everybody's excited around here. The Bengals haven't been good since I was a little guy. So it's interesting.
Well, I tweeted. I realized after the Niners Rams game. When the Niners won, I sent out a tweet. I said, that was a betting opportunity missed because everybody knows that the Bengals are only allowed to play the 49ers in the Super Bowl. And if you can't project that they're both going to be underdogs Sunday, but if you can't see a Bengals Niners third Super Bowl, there's something wrong with you.
Well, what was crazy is back then the Bengals beat Buffalo to get to the Super Bowl too. So I'm sure we beat the Bills, or you know, the Bengals beat the Bills. But actually, when I was a kid, I was like ostracized by my family because I was actually a Niners fan growing up.
Ooh.
Because my uncle lived in San Fran and got me a Niners hat, and I didn't really even know much about football at the time or anything. I just knew I liked that red and gold hat I had. Joe Montana and Jerry Rice were really good, so you know, I was rooting for the 49ers back then, but this time around I'll root for the Bengals for sure if it happens.
Yeah, Paul McGee's going to join us next, and I know that that household is a Bengal household.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I'll root for them. Even though I lived, you know, it's funny. I lived in Kansas. After I left Cincinnati, I moved to Kansas City.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So
I guess I could live with either one of them at this point. But, yeah, if the Eagles aren't going to be anywhere, then I'll start.
Looks like the AFC is just loaded to me, but I'm not
seems
a big
like
football
it.
Guy. But it just seems like this year's AFC teams are quarterbacks have been so good. It's been fun to watch anyway.
Well, yesterday was just, I mean, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, I had it sort of on in the background because I was playing. Once the racing ended, I mean, I was watching at that point. But plus Tina, if we weren't watching the game, if she wanted the TV, I was watching the game on Yahoo on my phone, and I had the laptop. I had the racing. Then between at some point she managed to go through all 7 episodes of Ozark, which got released on Friday night, on Friday afternoon, Ozark season 4. I guess they're doing it like Mad Men did. There's 7 episodes now, and then there's another 7, I guess, coming, or some more are coming in a little bit. Well, the funniest part is, in episode 4 of this season of Ozark, there's a very short scene in an OTB, and there's a little red feather horse that, in fact, Billy Koch tweeted about it Saturday afternoon. Either he saw it or somebody alerted him, watched through episode 4. So there's a little racing tidbit in Ozark for people. It literally is up on the screen for, you know, 3 jumps.
Right.
It's pretty funny.
Pretty good.
Yeah,
any way you can get racing out there, the better, I guess. Right?
Exactly. Well, and let's check in. I thought this was a really good story, and it's always nice to talk to you anyway. But Miss Mosaic, when I saw the win, because Hammer and I talked about the race briefly on Friday, and she obviously was one of the ones. But then when I saw the after story, Ben, that this was going to be her last race, looking for black type to be bred, the story really got interesting. And then Lauren Gash wrote a great piece about, the background. So anyway, I right away I took an interest. Then I saw the thing about then I saw that Artax was the broodmare sire and tied into Lou Albitrani retiring. So there was all kinds of intriguing things about this.
Feel good angles. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Really. No, it was a cool thing that she was able to go out a winner. And you know, we've been hunting she's gotten the black type, and she's just been a little unlucky. Run against some really good horses, and also, you know, anytime she seemed to run really good, it was always somebody just ran just that little bit better. But, and she's had some, there's a couple times she had a little bit of, you know, racing luck. She's so big, and if she gets checked or kind of stopped at all, it's hard for her to get going again. And that's kind of the only instructions I gave David was just, you know, there seems to be a lot of pace. You're breaking from the outside, let her build up ahead of steam and come running. And it seems like if she's in front at the top of the stretch, she doesn't stop to the wire. So, you know, we've always thought in one of these races, if she could make the lead and kind of put the speed away at the top of the stretch that she runs on, especially shortening up from her last race, you know, the cutback angle I always kind of like with a filly like her. And, you know, the Parks tracks always seem to be pretty tiring. So when they come out of there, they're fit. So, you know, we knew we were running one last time, and AJ and I both agreed that, you know, with one of her better races that she could probably win, and you know, it was able to work out. And usually, you know, in this game, it's you gotta really enjoy it when it does. So that was fun for them, because, you know, she's been such a big thing, big part of their last couple years and how well she's done, and you know, with her pedigree and them having, you know, they raced as a partnership, Miss Temple City as well. So it was it's just really cool that they've had the patience to stick with her and, you know, let me do my job that they're great, greatest to train for. They never, you know, kind of they just let you do your job, and whatever you decide, you know, that they always, you know, there's nothing, you know, never any second guessing or something if it doesn't pan out. So it was really rewarding for them and for the filly, because I always thought she deserved, you know, to win a stake and be remembered as a stakes winner. And now she's going to tap it. And, you know, not very often in this game do you get kind of a, you know, kind of a good story like that. You know, it's just everybody, you know, just everything working out.
That's great. I mean, she's kept. You look at her running lines, and you see just a, you know, a parade, particularly Bell's the One, who she, you know, ran against repeatedly, and that was no small task. And there's a story here too that to me, being by Verrazano, who is a more than ready, I understand the, you know, the approach and the time spent on the turf and you know, going up to Woodbine and turfway and the synthetic, but it, in retrospect now, it does kind of feel like, you know, she was a dirt horse all along.
Yeah, she really, well, you know, it's kind of funny. She definitely is better sprinting on the dirt, no doubt about it. But she was, you know, and they gave her so much time. She, you know, she had little on and off stuff as a two-year-old, hind end stuff, and never really could, you know, kind of really be pinpointed. And then I got her as a three-year-old, and you know, she was always trained fine on the dirt, but you know, we always thought it'd be easier for her hind end on grass and synthetics. And then being a half to Miss Temple City, the grass really wasn't like, you know, crazy thought. But you know what happened is, as she got older, she started to work so good on the turf, on the dirt, that, you know, and her turf races were okay but not like exceptional. AJ and I got to talking one day, and I said, you know, man, she works so, and we were always hoping that we could kind of do it the natural way of entering a turf race and having it come off and get to run on the dirt. So, you know, we kind of always had that kind of angle that, you know, she does do well enough on the dirt that if it came off, we'd always want to run. Well, she had one work at Keeneland one day, and it was just so good that I just kind of said, AJ, well, I think we just got to try her on the dirt. And he was, you know, in agreement. He was there that day and watched her work, and you know, and then kind of the rest is history. So, you know, then I'm kicking myself, man, I'm an idiot. I should have tried her on the dirt sooner. But, you know, to be honest, I don't know if she'd have been a dirt horse early on, if she'd have been hanging around this long. You know, it might not have been one of those things where she was able, because she got just sounder and sounder as she got older, as, you know, a lot of horses do when you give them time to mature and you know, you take your time with them, they'll continue to improve. And obviously she's continued to improve until her six-year-old year, which has been great. So, you know, that's kind of the story of why she all of a sudden became a dirt sprinter. It was more kind of, we always had plans to maybe try it, and then all of a sudden she just blossomed and just got so good on breathing on the dirt. She was just so much stronger behind. I always thought she was a little soft behind, even up till, you know, mid four-year-old year. She was, you know, and then just since then she's just been so consistent. And like you said, her running lines against the horses she's run against, and you know, even in her allowance race, it seemed like she always caught a monster. I'm drawing a blank on the name of the filly, but the Oxo Larry Best filly of Paulo Lobos that beat us at Churchill. I mean, she came back and won a, you know, graded stake at Gulfstream in her next start. It looks like she could be one of the leaders in the division next year if everything goes well. So, I mean, you know, I really am glad that we got a chance to go out a winner, because she always ran winning races, and then when she got beat, it was just always somebody was just a tad bit better that day. So,
well, this was really a clever spot to pick out too. I mean, on top of everything else, it's $150,000 for that goes, 90,000 goes in. She so basically kicks her earnings up to 300,000.
Yeah, and you know, to be honest, sometimes the cleverest of spots come from, you know, kind of halfway desperation. We had I always kind of was going to nominate to Oaklawn, but you know, the Laurel race was there as well, and then that kind of got canceled, pushed back, and the problems that Laurel's having with the track.
Yeah.
Kind of, we had entered her at Laurel and also entered at Parks, and we chose to go to Parks, and there was another race coming back at Laurel. So, you know, it was kind of one of those things where we didn't know what Laurel was going, and we knew we were running out of time, so that the you know, maybe what would have been plan B ordinarily, because Hello Beautiful being retired out of the, you know, Mid-Atlantic circuit, all of a sudden opened up that circuit a little bit. It kind of just was one of those things where you're rewarded for just keeping all your options open and going, you know. And it was it made a lot of sense, the Oakland race. You know, it was coming back a little quick in 3 weeks, but the filly had done so well, and she was dead fit, and I just didn't really do much with her, to be honest. In between the Parks race and the Oakland race, just kept her happy, and, you know, she did a lot of jogging and weather. You know, the way it was, we weren't able to do a lot of training anyway, and I think, you know, maybe that, you know, helped her, probably other than other horses, because she was so dead fit coming out of that race that, you know, she just didn't need to do much in between races, and, you know, less was probably more, looking back on things.
Well, she goes out a stake winner, Miss Mosaic, and that's a nice pairing with Tappet. So for the Keystone people, and this was a homebred for them with Bob Feld, and
it's like a, you know, it is really just one of those really good, you know, stories. They don't have a big, you know, broodmare band, you know. This is kind of their, you know, she's like a family member to them. Both AJ, you know, Aaron Judy and his parents, you know, they've gone up to Saratoga with her, and, you know, she's just been a great thing for their lives, and they really enjoyed her, I'm sure. And now they'll get to continue enjoying her in her next career. And, you know, I think if I know them, I bet they'll try to keep a daughter out of her, and, you know, those type of things. So I think it'll be kind of a story that's not finished being written yet, you know, so continue
on. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, she ended up winning three times, nine more placements, 8 seconds and a third, and a winner at the final start. How'd you end up with that was the first time you ever used Danny Cabrera?
Yeah, you know, I've kind of been watching the Oakland scene down there, and I've always kind of noticed him, and I know I deal with Jose Santos Jr.'s agent at Turfway, him having Esquivel, and he's kind of, you know, Santos Inc. is all over the place, so, you know, he's your one-stop, you know, call for riders and stuff. So, and I knew that a lot of the bigger guys were going to be at Fairgrounds that day. And, you know, like I said before, we were kind of, you know, we were hunting around at different races, and, you know, we weren't, you know, we were just trying to, you know, we didn't want to get somebody tied up, and then if we didn't run, kind of keep them on the hook. So it was kind of a last-minute thing to book Danny, and it was great because he was very professional, and he called me before the race, and I just told him, you know, I just ride her with confidence, and, you know, one of her best races is probably, you know, she can win this race. And he was in agreement. He said, you know, when he got on her, she was full of confidence, and, you know, he just had a lot of confidence in her, the way she warmed up with him. And, you know, I thought it was a really, you know, really, he was probably the difference, you know, to be honest, because it was one of those things, if he didn't, you know, make his assertive move like he did, you know, maybe he doesn't hold off the closers, but, you know, I just thought she ran all the way to the wire, and he gave her a great ride. You know, it's just a great team that got it done. So we were super excited and proud of everybody.
How many horses have you run it over the years at Oakland?
You know, not a whole lot. I'd say it's probably under 10. I mean, you know, probably even less than that. You know, probably you know, between 5 and 10 over the years. You know, I've run. You know, I've run Rising Seas, ran down there, the filly that I owned with my parents, and then her mother ran down there, Sea Shadow, and I've run a handful of other ones, but not a whole bunch, to be honest. And it's something I always want to do more, you know, because I think that, you know, it's a very doable ship from Kentucky, you know, and it's just hard to split a string and send it down there to Oakland. So I always like to, you know, have my eye on other tracks from Kentucky. You know, we do Laurel a lot, and obviously New York, we'll run in New York. And, you know, Kentucky, we're 10 hours from a lot of places, and to me, 10 hours is a doable van ride for a horse. You know, it's not, you know, if they're good shippers, and, you know, Miss Mosaic, she doesn't, you know, it seems like she's taking her game on the road and giving us confidence that we're able to ship her around. So, I really like Oakland, and the program down there has been great, you know, for everybody. So I hope to continue to keep, you know, have it as kind of one of the wintertime things, you know, for maybe since Turfway's gotten so good, you know, but sometimes the synthetic's not for everybody. You know, you have that option to take a decent dirt horse down to Oakland from training here. So, I'll continue to keep it on my radar for sure, and hope to get down there as much as possible.
Well, that brings up the opportunity to ask how the other big 6-year-old mare is in the barn.
Oh yeah, well, there's two. There's her, and I got Ambassador Luna at 6 as well. So I got, you know.
What about
six?
I'm asking about. I want club car.
No, club car. No, both. But there's, you know, I didn't want to. Yeah, club
All
car.
Right, okay, right. And Ambassador
club
Luna.
Car's doing great. She's back, but you know, she's gonna run. You know, she'll run. I mean, you kind of were hoping to get maybe one in her before the Barbara Fritchie, but it's looking like she might end up having to just train up to the Barbara Fritchie with everything that kind of transpired with, you know, Laurel having to push everything back in the racetrack. So, you know, the Barbara Fritchie, and we'll also keep an eye on Oklahoma Third for the next one down there. And, you know, there's a race in New York for in the middle of March if either one of those come up too quick. But she's back on the work tab, and she seems as good as ever as a 6-year-old. And I think last year, you know, just again, the same story with her, you know, just Belle's the one and how consistent and how good she is, you know. So we're always seem like the, and you know, Wisconsin as well. I think Kentucky right now with the older sprint division is a pretty salty bunch. So, you know, but club car, she's another one like Miss Mosaic, always shows up, you know, always, you know, we're just another one to be really proud of because he's, you know, done it year after year after year and continued to get better and better. And I think last year when we finally made the decision to put the blinkers on her, I think we got a little bit more out of her, you know, because sometimes she was hitting, like at Arlington especially, I thought she hit the front a little too soon and just kind of waited for other horses. So I think with the blinkers, it's made her a little bit more, you know, professional. And you know, she always runs, but she's just too nice. I tell KK, you know, the owner, I said, she's too much like you. She's too sweet and nice. She waits for other horses. but she's been another one that, you know, has been a, you know, real blessing. Her earnings are great. She's multiple graded stakes. She did finally get the elusive stakes win, and her sister's that Scylla, who's graded stakes place. So, you know, that Into Mischief mare sitting at the bar is really looking like she's a real deal brood mare. So we were lucky to get in with, you know, Mike and KK were lucky to get in that family with Club Car and buying her as her first foal out of the sale.
I was going to say,
you know, a big pretty Malibu Moon mare like her. I mean, she's definitely going to join the broodmare band, but you know, we feel like she's not quite ready yet this year. So she will continue to run where Miss Mosaic will be retired. I think Club Car will continue on throughout the whole year, and then probably as a 7-year-old, you know, we'll go to the shed, I would imagine. But we'll hopefully get a full year out of Club Car, and maybe get that elusive graded stake with her would be fantastic, because I think she's just knocking on the door and just maybe needs a little luck and breakthrough in one of them.
Well, and you know, it's funny that you mentioned the Louisiana bred, because Scylla and that mare herself that's sitting at the bar, this is that great story from last summer when Brett Brinkman brought Scylla to Saratoga, and she ran in Charlie Baker's name, and people really didn't. I still think even now people don't realize that this is all Brett Brinkman, and
right.
it's him and partners that bred Scylla. There was also Jack the Umpire. In between Scylla and Club Car, that was a stake winner.
Yeah, no, she's been, you know, I think three foals, three stakes wins. So, no, I mean, she's you know, she's what you're looking for in a brood mare, and you know, Into Mischief. What can you say, right? I mean, just he can do it all. Brood mare sire, you know, racehorse sire.
It's crazy.
You know, he gets you anything. It will be interesting to see, you know, what he can do as a brood mare sire. Considering, you know, I wouldn't think there's probably not too many really that, you know, like sitting at the bar that has had a chance to kind of really get rolling. Cause I mean, she was definitely, I mean, she's the first really good Into Mischief that I remember. And I actually was training for Ed Seltzer at the time. And, you know, it's funny. He tells me, he said, you know, Into Mischief, I definitely was kind of hearing about, and I'm having, you know, some runners and everything. And he says to me one day, he said, this Into Mischief's going to be the next Mr. Prospector. And I was like, okay, sure he is. Who knew? He was right, because he's amazing at picking those stallions.
Let's confirm. Ed Seltzer is going to be the smartest guy in the room about 98% of the time.
That is right. That is true. Yep. So, no, that was pretty funny that, you know, And I just continued to watch him, and I'm like, man, he's... And then he kind of had Munnings pegged. I mean, he just, time and time again, he was picking the right stallions. So it was pretty crazy that, you know, he was able to, you know, he's looking at the numbers early on, and he could see that, you know, he was just swinging way above his weight class as far as the quality of runners that he was getting to the mares he was getting early on. And, you know, he was very quick to take notice and was probably rewarded, you know, I'm sure very well by, you know, he's got a bunch of fillies by Intimistus now, so that's going to be great.
Unbelievable. You mentioned, you also mentioned Luna. Where are you heading there?
She's down at Tampa, and she, you know, probably running the Lightning Stakes, you know, kind of February 19th would be the plan with her. And then, you know, get her back to Keeneland and, you know, look for something here for her in Kentucky. She's funny. She's a Florida bred, but she seems to do her best racing in Kentucky. It's kind of the joke we say about her. But, you know, I think the Lightning Stakes is a good timing-wise from her last race and then into, you know, and hopefully have a real, you know, full calendar year with her and, you know, run her. There'll be a lot of spots for her. You know, the turf sprinter division, obviously this time of year, there's just not a lot of spots for them. So hopefully as the year goes on, you know, there'll be plenty of races between, you know, all the turf racing all over, and you know, get some good opportunities for her, because she's another one I think that, you know, I think a lot of these horses do get better, even, you know, 4, 5, 6, but a lot of times, you know, horses just, you know, get retired for whatever reasons, but I do think that horses can get better as they get older, especially the fillies that seem to just, you know, be progressing each year and each race. So, well, you know, it's nice to have some quality older fillies in the barn for sure.
Ambassador Luna is a Brethren mare, 5-year-old. Who is Voodoo Man racing?
Voodoo Man is a lady from Tampa named Vanessa Nye, who a really great lady that's, you know, super supportive of the industry and into all the aftercare and stuff. So she doesn't have a lot of horses. She's got Luna's mother, and she's got a dialed in 2-year-old by her, you know, half to Ambassador Luna. So, and she's going to breed her. She'll breed her as well this year, I think. And, you know, I guess eventually she's in no hurry to get Luna to the broodmare band, but I think at some point Luna will join her broodmare band as well. And, you know, she got the graded stakes placing at Keeneland last fall, so she's another one that's you know, kind of a stakes winner and graded stakes place, and those mares, you know, are just so, you know, that when they can do that, that it's hard to find them that are that quality, and when you get them, it's great to have. So
how did she end up with that mare, that Spanish Ambassador?
She, I don't know how she actually got the mare. I've never heard this whole story from her on. I mean, I know she bred Luna, but the mare, I know she raced her. So, I mean, I know that, but I don't know if she may have very well bred her. I probably should know, but I don't know if she bred her or if she just, you know, purchased her at some point. But she owned her during her racing career and raced her till she was an older mare, and then she's, you know, retired her and bred her, and, you know, she was breeding her in Florida, and now she's, you know, since Luna's been so productive, she's breeding the Kentucky Stallions now, and David and Gary Priest, you know, help her with the broodmare stuff, the mares, I think, go to Gary's farm and be bred, and I know she went to Dialed In, and I don't know if she's made up her mind for who she's going to this year, but, you know, it's a small but a you know, very good, she's done very well.
Nice.
One mare to be able to breed a filly like that is quite an accomplishment.
Unbelievable. And that was a filly that RNA'd as a yearling for $24,000, Martin Stables, and so must have been acquired privately.
Right.
And unbelievable.
I think all these stories, you know, even the Balls is not a big breeding band, you know, it just is, it's good to show, you know, that the industry can, you know, that even the guys with just a small broodmare band can go, you know, kind of do things like this with, you know, those three fillies and have them all going back at some point to join their broodmare band. And, you know, hopefully with any luck, maybe I'll be training, you know, sons and daughters out of these for the next few years and keep me in business.
I love it. I want to ask you.
You always got to be looking towards the future, you know, Steve.
Exactly. Speaking of the future, you do have an interesting filly that I want to ask about that already, and I want you to talk about the program at Turfway, and you know, because you're taking advantage of it. You've got for Andrew Warren. You've got a Cupid filly that is appropriately a gray out of a crypto clearance mare that Runnymede bred, Valentina Day. And, you know, Cupid may have started a little slow, but has come on in a big way the last 90 to 100 days. Suddenly has got three stake winners, as well as a graded stake placer, that Desert Dawn, that was third in the Chandelier. And the Cupids are scoring on a regular basis suddenly. What can you tell us about her?
You know, I think the biggest thing, and, you know, maybe it's a reason why Cupid's gotten so hot, is because to me she's just really a two-turn type filly, big scopey filly. You know, if I let her out and said she was a tappet, you'd believe me. And she seems to really want to run her out of ground. Like, you know, we don't know how, you know, I mean, she showed she's very talented, but as the distances get further in these races, I really don't, you know, mile and eighth will be, I think, will be no problem for her. So, you know, we'll just keep, moving her up the ladder, and, you know, we'll work her back, and, you know, I'd say we'll probably keep her on the poly, and, you know, just point to, you know, hopefully, you know, running in the Bourbon at Oaks, you know, with the race in between. But she's done everything we've asked of her. She's still a little green, I guess, would be the only thing I would say, in her races, you know, just late to switch leads and just kind of looks around. But you know, she's gradually improved each race. Like, her first race at Churchill, she was very green, and then second a little better at Turfway, and then the last one, she still was kind of through the stretch wandering a little bit, but she's definitely progressed with each race. And no, she's an exciting filly, because I think, you know, anytime you got a, you know, two-turn, three-year-old colt or filly this time of year, that, you know that the distance is going to be an issue with, it's exciting for sure. So, and I mean, I think that's probably, in my opinion, I mean, I don't know about all the Cupids, but to me, just looking at her, I think, you know, he's a horse that probably can get you, you know, a two-turn quality animal, and that's what obviously what the whole business is looking for. So, you know, I think Cupid's the one that I would continue to keep an eye on, for me, you know.
Well, he stands for 5,000 at Ashford.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a bargain. He finished 2021 as the number five ranked first crop stallion. And then this weekend, actually, that Sterling Silver that I mentioned also won the, I just happened to look down on my list of stake winners from the weekend. That horse of Albert Tranny's is a Cupid, Sterling Silver.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, you know, for 5,000, I don't think you can do, you really couldn't go wrong, you know, reading to him for that price.
And the fact that he's a son of Tappet too, you know, the Tappets, it takes a little bit to connect all the dots with them.
For sure. And then, you know, he was out of such a good mare as well, that, you know, Tom Van Meter and, you know, that had so much luck with him or her over the years, that Bo Genius mare, I'm losing what her name is, but, you know, I know they sold
Pretty and Smart.
A lot of money worth of yearlings at her over the years. So, you know, the female side's there, Tappet, and, you know, he did win at the grade one level. He's getting results with his foals. So
amazing. Pretty and Smart was that mare.
Pretty and Smart. Yeah, exactly.
So. Pretty and Smart. Ashley's Kitty, Heart Ashley, Indianapolis, Cupid. Actually, he's got, there's actually an unraced three-year-old by Medaglia Doro kicking around, Pretty Doro.
Right.
As well.
Yeah.
Oh, that Soto Voce never made the races. That, I remember with that, wow. Tried a bunch of Tappet, went 4 years in a row to Tappet. And there was Dream Team too. I remember Dream Team.
Huh. Yep.
Wow. That's an interesting. She must be gone. She hasn't had a foal since 19.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think Bo Genius, right? She would have had.
Yeah, she'd be. Well, she was. She'd be 24.
24. Okay, but she might be pensioned out at Stock Place probably or something.
And I'm curious. She came around. She was foaled in '98, So actually, Bo Genius was only 14 or 13 when he covered that dam. I'm gonna. This is gonna be. I can tell already. We're gonna be talking to Sid on Wednesday about this. Let me ask you. You know, you almost. I'm sure Saturday night around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. You thought maybe you had a chance to win two stakes at two different venues Saturday.
Yeah, and you know how horse racing is. You never get greedy. But you know, I thought. You know, to be honest, I really thought Miss Mosaic had a great chance. But I really liked. I like Friar Lawrence's spot with the scratches, you know, and he had kind of beaten, you know, the other horses in the race and, you know, Brad's horse that went on to win the race. But, you know, we didn't see the real Friar Lawrence. And, you know, he came out of the race, okay. He's sound and, you know, no real issues. But I think we're, you know, there's still something that was, you know, under the surface to, you know, we haven't really totally figured it out yet, but we're just still going over it. And, you know, we'll keep him, keep a close eye on him. But that was Dot. You know, his race, and whether it was the two turns or whether it was just, you know, an off night, we haven't really kind of fully deduced. But, yeah, it was a little bit disappointing. But, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things that happens with horse racing. They all can't, you know, you can't win them all. And sometimes, you know, horses, you know, throw in clunkers and you just, you know, get them back. And but his first two races obviously were very good. And, you know, we'll just try to get him back. And, you know, he was a little bit. He seemed kind of stressed after the race, but, you know, nothing really to pinpoint just yet. But, you know, we'll take our time with him. And Andrew's been a great owner, and he's very patient with his horses. And, you know, we'll get a good beat on him before we figure out what we're going to do next with him. But, you know, I think, well, just wasn't his night, and sometimes that happens. So, you know, onwards and upwards, I think you got to look through the can't look in the rear view too much in this business or you'll drive yourself crazy. So we'll find something else for him down the road and hopefully get him back on track. Cause he has shown some talent. You know, I think we'll see better days from him going forward.
Well, this week, opportunity already lined up, looking ahead to Friday. You've got a pair, Ice Queen and Jump Into the Fire and a Claimer. And then on Saturday, tell us about the allowance horse, Cultham, with Joe Rocco Jr., the American Pharaoh.
You know, yeah, you know, we're kind of on the raise there. She broke her maiden for 30. But, you know, we like the way she did it, and she really showed an affinity for the for the synthetic track, and instead of risking her for a price again, we wanted to just see kind of where we stack up against, you know, better horses. So we're dipping our toes in the water a little bit there. It looks like a, you know, competitive spot, but I think she deserved a chance to, you know, try allowance horses, and her, you know, her breeze in between the race was good. And she's just a filly that I think, you know, kind of really found her home on the synthetic in her last race. And just looking to get another running into her and learn a little bit more about her and see where we stack up.
Well, it's already off to a good start at a good, you know, early part of the winter at Turfway. The program, if the building is as nice as the purses, it's there's going to be a nice future there in Florence.
Oh, for sure. No, I'm really excited. I mean, I think Kentucky, if, you know, being based in Kentucky year-round is really becoming a reality, you know, so for owners and trainers, it's really been a blessing, and jockey as well. And, you know, looking at the progress they're making on the plant, it looks like they're making a lot of headway. You see it take shape, and it looks like it's going to be a beautiful building, and it's just exciting time. To be a part of the Kentucky circuit, because with the instant racing machines, and that, you know, maybe if sports betting, you know, down the line at some point, you know, I think that could kind of dovetail nicely into what's happening already. And, you know, in Ellis Park, you know, I think they'll do some capital improvements that they had talked about that kind of got put on the back burner with COVID and everything. So no, I mean, and what's going on at Churchill, and then obviously Keeneland's always Keeneland, you know, it's special no matter what. So,
And no, I mean, it's just a great, really, you know, it's one of the few states that you look at and you really see on an upward trend. And, you know, hopefully what we're doing here maybe can be a business model for some other states. I mean, Arkansas has got a good thing going there. You know, so hopefully, you know, just hopefully brighter days ahead, because obviously, you know, I think, you know, some people kind of tend to dwell on the bad news, but hopefully we can kind of, you know, I mean, I know horse racing people are always upbeat and, you know, resilient bunch. So I think
we're trying, Ben.
Yeah. So, but no, I think the you know, in a couple years' time at Turfway, I mean, who knows what it's going to look like and how quality the racing could be. And I mean, look, there's a path to get to the Derby and the Oaks there. So that's great.
Well, Ben, continued success. Always a pleasure. Well done with Miss Mosaic, and we'll catch up soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Thanks for your time, and thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Colebrook Racing, everybody, on Twitter, Ben Colebrook, and somebody else who can appreciate what's going on in Kentucky and who does go out of town, does go out of state for the winter. Paul McGee joins us on the heels of Pass the Plates win in the Marie Krantz Memorial on Saturday on the big LeComp card. Paul, congratulations.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
You know, if somebody had had a winter book, whether you would be on the show in 2022 before Marty, that would have, you would have gotten great odds. But somehow you've cashed the big ticket, Paul McGee on before Marty this year.
How about that? Isn't that something?
Well, every time I've reached out to him, he's had some other crazy thing. Last week, his computer died on him, and he was going crazy getting his stories in. So he said, "Let me pass." And the week before, there was something other crazy. Last year too, he had the his eye situation. It's, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I beat you to the show for 2022, Steve.
Well, this was, you know, Pass was certainly, it made plenty of sense when you looked at this field. And I got to tell you, the way the thing was getting bet, honestly, Paul, I didn't understand why she wasn't taking more money.
Yeah, 1920. I thought that was very generous. I'm glad I had a little bit of that. But yeah, that filly, she comes with that late run just about every time. You know, she's very consistent with that late run of hers, and she was coming out of a dirt race at Churchill, which that's not her forte, so maybe that contributed to the big price the other day. But yeah, she kicked it in the other day and came on strong. She made it a little closer than I wanted, but she got it done in the end.
What was your impression, and if you had any conversation with Marcelino Pedroza, because they took the rail down, and the word was that those inside paths were going to be kind of boggy, and so it kind of seemed like, you know, the outside rally was the preferable approach to the turf course on Saturday.
Yeah, Marcelino rode a really good race. I see Marcelino as a really, really good young rider. He had been breezing this filly for me, and she breezes the way she races. So he got to know her in her breeze.
Hmm.
She always 27s, 28s, first quarter in her breezes. And so, but I think the other day he had in his mind, you know, there was no doubt that she was going to be coming from out of it. So, but yeah, the fact that he angled it up, it worked out really good for us.
Yeah, you had to be a little concerned with the scratches, because you certainly wanted to see some honest pace, and as it happens, there were enough that stayed in that, you know, that at least kept the pace somewhat honest.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, with the scratches, but even with the scratches, like you said, there was still a lot of speed in the race. So we did like that part of it. And she never really, actually, she's been known to get further back than she was the other day. You know, she's come from
26 and out of it before. And but the other day I saw her as, although she was last all the way around there, she was actually relatively close up. I think the most she was out of it was maybe 10 lengths or so. But I've known this filly to be 20-something out of it early on. And interesting little tidbit about this filly, Steve. Her debut at she debuted at Kentucky Downs as a 2-year-old at 113-1 because Paul McGee never does anything with first-time starters. So she's 113-1 in her debut and ran a really good third. Her second start at Keeneland, she was 8-5. So I would challenge you to find a horse that ever went from 113-1 to 8-5 in their next start, but she did. So she had that late kick in her debut at Kentucky Downs, and then she had the late kick in her maiden win at Keeneland also. But again, she just always seems to come with that good late run. But I'm not going to change her running style. That's for sure. I'm not going to send her to the lead next time out.
No, and I mean, and you look. In fact, I guess the only time she's ever shown anything close to the pace was when she got rained off the turf back in the Mrs. Revere and in that allowance going back to 2020 in the fall.
Yes, right.
She actually did attend the pace a little bit. She's multiple graded stake place, though. This is a big win. We just talked to Ben, and she had won the Pago Hop. So now she's a multiple stake winner. Probably would be tremendous to get her a graded stake win. But, you know, this is a homebred for the Hamiltons, out of Pocket Gift, the Great Notion mare. That's been productive, I think, for them, past the plate.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Steve, what the others out of Pocket Gifts have done. I do know that the Hamiltons raced Great Notion. They raced the Broodmare Sire as well. So it's truly a homebred for the Hamiltons. So I was really happy for them.
That was is that Darren Miller, right? He had all.
Yes, correct. Yes, Darren trained Great Notion. Yes.
Yeah. And an elusive quality, and that was back in the early days of this new great turf sprint era. Although, you know what, I just looked him up. He won the Southwest you know what's funny about him? He was really a two-turn horse too. That's kind of funny. When you look at what he's done and what he did, they've had a nice long sustained run. The Hamiltons.
Yes, they've had some really nice horses along the way. Yes.
How many do you have for them?
I have 3 for them right now. I had a 2-year-old that debuted for us the other day, and he ran really good. He was a real good second. He made the lead turn for him. But once again, I couldn't win with a first-time starter. But he ranged up there like he was going to win. Came up to him, and he's by a horse called Atreides. His name is Big Blue Line, and he debuted for me and the Hamiltons the other day here at the fairgrounds, and ran a really good race. Got beat by the 6-5 favorite. Steve asked me, said had a horse that had was second in 100 in his debut at Lone Star, and so we met him the other day. But this Atreides colt the other day, he ran a really good second, and that's for the Hamiltons as well.
Very nice. In fact, Paul McGee's with us. Everything you've sent out since the calendar turned, you got the 2 wins, Zip and Gigi as well last week, 2 wins, 2 seconds, and a third, and 5 starts in 2022.
I tell you, that win for Blue Tarp Stables the other day, that was a great, great win. That's for some New Orleans guys, or primarily New Orleans guys. There's also a couple of Kentucky guys in on that. But Tom O'Keefe runs the Blue Tarp Stables here in New Orleans. And, of course, the name comes from the blue tarps that we get down here after our hurricanes. But that win, that was Blue Tarp Stables' first win here at their home track of the fairgrounds. And so we had a big crowd in the winner's circle, big post-race party and everything. So that was a great, great win the other day with Zip and Gigi.
Well, it's funny I'm glad we circled around to this because McGowey was on with me on Friday, and Frank talked about them, and in fact Tom wrote to me because he heard McGowey talking about the win and about the Great Silks with the hurricane warning logo with a fleur-de-lis in the center.
Right, and get this, in the description of the silks in the program, they are tarpaulin blue. So Tom figured if the Whitney Stables could describe their silks as Eton blue,
sure,
that we should be able to describe our silks as tarpaulin blue. So,
funny.
I was proud of the fact that Tom got that done in the description of the silks.
Wow, that is tremendous, and I wrote back. We'll see Tom and everybody when we come down for Risen Star Week. You're having you win the Krantz, and you obviously have got all the opportunities the next two big days, Risen Star Day and Derby Day, and so it feels like 2022 couldn't be getting off to a better start.
Yeah, I feel like my horses are running well, so that's always a good thing, because you don't always get that. You know, you go through times where it seems like all your horses are running poorly. So when you send everything out and they're running good for you, that's the best feeling in the world.
Paul McGee, always a pleasure to be able to have you on and congratulate you. We'll see you in a few weeks when we're down there at Risen Star Week.
All right, sounds good, Steve. And be sure to get Marty on, will you?
I'm going to try. Send him a note. Tell him, why are you avoiding Vic?
All right, will do, Steve.
Thanks, Paul. Paul McGee, right. Everybody, and off to a tremendous start and winning the Krantz with Pass the Plate for Silverton Hill for the Hamiltons. And that's so funny that the Blue Tarp team comes up a second time. Came up on, if you listen to the replay this morning, you heard McGowey talking about it from Friday. And Tom O'Keefe sent me a great note the other day. Well, we didn't know if there was going to be a show, and lo and behold, there was a show. Hope you enjoyed it. Paul McGee, Ben Colebrook, Mig as well, and we got plenty more to recap tomorrow. Andy Serling will join us, too. We'll be able to, in person, congratulate Andy. If you didn't see on Friday afternoon, the New York chaplaincy, Humberto Chavez and his team, they are recognizing Andy for his incredible generosity associated with the Backstretch Employees Assistance Team and the chaplain and all the great work that the chaplaincy does in New York. And Andy, that, believe me, that's the tip of the iceberg with Andy when it comes to contributing to the important causes around the game. Good luck if you're playing today. There's not a lot of choice. Mahoning Valley, some quarters in Bossier City at Louisiana Downs, and Turf Paradise. So we'll talk to you in the morning. If you missed anything, replay 6 to 9 here on SiriusXM, at the website later with the archive and podcast, etc. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.